Welcome in, everyone, to this week's Five Aside, the show where we discuss five things aside from the most recent Five Stripes match. My name is Glenn Pizon, and joining me tonight is a woman, just one woman tonight. We are catless tonight. No cats. It's Jennifer Taylor. Hello, Jennifer.
Hey.
Kristen is, I don't know, her back is hurting. She's working nonstop, so we gave her the night off. So you all are going to have to put up with us too. A few weeks ago, Don Garber, the soccer Don, met with the 12 heads of the Board of Governors to discuss how MLS rules, specifically salary cap and roster construction, should evolve. About damn time. We were just talking about this a couple weeks ago on a previous Five Aside, that this has to be part of the solution, or really the whole solution, for the U.S. Open Cup to continue and to have all MLS clubs participate. It's not the match congestion. It's not the fixture congestion. It's not the schedule. It's the ability to handle the workload. And teams don't have that ability right now, as all of these silly rules that we're going to go through are currently constructed that really hamstrings teams' ability to compete fully in three domestic competitions.
So basically, in a nutshell, the TLDR of this is we're going to go through all the things you really don't understand about how MLS salary works.
Correct.
That none of us really understand, but
we don't understand it either. We don't get it either. And you shouldn't. Give me a few minutes here to go through at least the top line rules, the most important stuff that really affect what we're talking about. If after all of this, you understand it all, well done. I'd be very impressed. All right. So bear with me here as I go through the most important aspects of what clubs have to deal with when building out their rosters and why it's so difficult to compete competitively, to be competitive in more than just one domestic tournament, let alone CONCACAF Champions Cup and all that. So a club's active roster is made up of up to 30 players. You don't have to have 30, but up to 30. All 30 players are eligible for selection to the game day squad during the regular season and the playoffs. Up to 20 players occupying roster slots 1 through 20 count against the club's salary budget. And this year, that is, and this increased, it's still very small compared to other top leagues around the world, but currently it is $5,470,000. I think that's like a 300-ish thousand increase from last year, maybe 400. Clubs are not required to fill the roster slots, 19 and 20, and clubs may spread their entire salary budget across 18 senior roster players. The salaries of players on the supplemental roster slots, which our new boy, Daniel Rios, right, from Chivas?
Yes.
Is that who we got?
Danny Rios.
Football is life. That's right, our very own. He is on a supplemental roster spot, and that is 21 through 30, and that does not count towards a club's salary budget. So a club may have no more than 10 players on its supplemental roster, subject, of course, to the season-ending injury, which we know all too well, and the injured list and some loan exceptions. And Rios might fit that. I'm not quite sure. But in 2024, so here's the other thing with comprising your team's roster is you can only have X amount of international players. And that's not uncommon for some other top leagues around the world to have some restrictions on international players, you know, and how many you can have. In 24 here, there are a total of 233 international roster slots that are divided among the 29 clubs. It'll be 30 next year with San Diego joining. that number, I would think, would then increase if this rule is still around or it doesn't change in any sort of meaningful way. These roster slots are tradable. There's no limit on the number of international roster slots on each club's roster. So in 2024, here comes the DP rule. Yeah. So there's this thing called, you know, budget charges. All this money that we're talking about, it's monopoly money, right? Like, it's not real. It just gets traded around the clubs. It's not like real money. DPs who are 24 years and older carry the max salary budget charge, which is $683,750. Unless that player joins after the opening of the secondary transfer window, in which case the budget charge is like half that. What that means is, you know, the DP, yes, we know you can spend messy amounts of money on a DP if you want. You can pay him 10 million, 20, 5, like Joseph was getting, 5.5, I think, or maybe closer to 6. That money is not part of the salary budget charge. It's still hitting against your cap for a DP. There's still a cost to the overall salary budget that you're allowed to spend. And a DP, each DP, you're allowed 3 currently, unless that increases, is 683,750. And that's just what each DP costs.
Yeah, just to chime in here, this is why a lot of clubs don't carry 3 DPs.
Correct.
Because if you carry 3 DPs,
right,
you're literally eating up a third of your budget
bucks.
Allocation.
A little more than that, close to 2K.
Yeah. Well, but no, but like if your total salary allocation is $5 million, that's almost,
right.
Yeah, that's like a
yeah,
third.
It's a big chunk. And you can get, at least domestically, good players for $600,000. DP level? No. But, you know, you could go the St. Louis way and not do that, right? Yeah, it's possible, and save even more money if you wanted to go down to, like, you know, a $400,000 level value player or what have you. Now, clubs can buy down that budget charge of a DP with GAM, general allocation money, but that reduced budget charge may not be less than $150,000. So you're still going to pay some, but it could be significantly less. And to further complicate things, each club in 2024, and there was a slight increase here, I believe, as well from previous years, gets $2,585,000 in GAM, which can be traded. Each club also receives $2.4 million in TAM, targeted allocation money, which cannot be traded.
So if you're playing along at home, folks, basically what you're talking about when you factor in the GAM the league gives you and the TAM the league gives you.
Garber Bucks.
With your Garber Bucks, you really have a club that can spend around $10.5 million in actual budget charges, because you can use the GAM and the TAM to make the amount that counts toward the total salary
correct.
Cap
to go kind of down. Buy things down. Yeah. So, but there's rules around how you can spend GAM and TAM
right.
as well, because of course there are. A player must earn more than the 2024 max budget charge for a DP of $683,750 to qualify for targeted allocation money. So a max TAM player like Miles, when he was with us, could receive $1.68 million. And you could use TAM money to pay that player above, you know, the max budget charge of $683,000, right? So that's what a high level, when you hear high level TAM player, somebody who's above $683,000, right? Like a Miles. That's the max that I assume we offered Miles was 1.6.
And this is where, like, you know, you get that line of really good high quality players or developing talent versus established more recognizable name talent coming in here that would command even higher salaries, that the only way to offset that is going to be, you know, using the DP rule.
Right. Clubs may use the funds to sign a new player, provided his salary and acquisition costs, that's part of it, the transfer fees and everything, that's part of it, counts towards your your budget charge, you know, that money does count towards it. So some of these transfer fees that we've paid and other clubs have paid too, I think we're kind of known for, or at least were, you know, we're kind of changing our way of operating and how we and where we go shopping. It's a little bit different these days, but we were kind of known for those big, big transfer fees, and that counts. It can be spread out, but it counts. Clubs may use all or a portion of the available TAM to convert a DP to a non-DP, assuming such player's salary budget charge meets the salary parameters, by buying down his salary budget. You could convert a DP or a high TAM player to below. Well,
that is actually what we did with Sabalo Genitze this year. Because he was a DP for us last year. And when we brought in Stan Gregerson, they converted using TAM. They converted Saba.
And you can go backwards too. Yeah. You can do that. You retain that flexibility to convert that player, Saba in this case, back to a DP if you have the free DP slot. In order to do that, which we currently do not have. A player cannot have his salary budget charge bought down below 150 using TAM. So, to sum things up, the club salary budget for this year is 5.470, $5,470,000. The max salary budget charge is $683,750. The senior minimum salary is only $89,000. The reserve minimum salary is $71,000. The DP budget charge, again, $683,750. And that's for all three DP slots. They don't increase. One is the same value as the second and the third. And the young designated player budget charge, which is 20 years old or younger, is 150, and for 21 to 23 it's 200,000. Good times. There is a rule change coming up here, and I'm losing my notes. Let me go find where that is, because Tom Bogert tweeted about this.
This is the one regarding the coupling of designated player and U22 initiative player rules. So right now the number of U22 players, I believe, is tied to having a young designated player on your roster, and they are going to unbundle that, which means that everybody will get three U22 initiative players. Right. No matter what their designated player structure system looks like.
Exactly. So
it opens up some more room for investment, because with the U22 players have a lower budget charge if you give them that designation.
Correct. Thank you for picking up the slack there. I lost my place in my notes. It just scrolled away.
You know, this is a lot of gobbledygook. I mean, it's a lot of gobbledygook.
And it's hard to understand, and it's why, God willing, this meeting that was had between Garber and the Board of Governors, they just reached the conclusion that if we really want to take the next step, really MLS 3.0, 4.0, 5.0, whatever 0.0 it is, we need to get serious and get rid of these silly little rules that are really vestiges from MLS trying to get off the ground and not go bankrupt and not be insolvent. We're past that. We're going to have 30 clubs. Olivier Giroud is coming to LAFC. Heartbreaking.
Why is it?
Messi is here. Suarez is here. We got big players here. We got to stop with all this. We got to let teams that want to spend, given the flexibility to do so. If that results in having a couple super clubs, So be it.
Every other Premier League in the world functions with super clubs and
that's right.
Other clubs. And I'm not.
If you spend, you will probably do well. There are exceptions to that rule. You cannot just spend your way to success all the time.
No, you can't.
But if you spend well, you do still need to spend. If you are a top league, you cannot moneyball this thing.
Well, and I think therein lies the crux of the issue. You cannot have one team or two teams that are getting everybody, right? Where other teams are hamstrung and can't bring in counter moves to compete with what those teams have brought in, right? Like, you know, I mean, we're all set, you know, there's a give and a take to having, you know, somebody of Messi's ilk in the league. It's like, okay, cool. Messi wants to bring all of his best friends over here. Okay, cool. But nobody else can spend to compete with it. You know, and again, cool. Good for you, Miami. You won the Messi Derby, right? But, you know, if we want to go out and get, you know, a front line of Giroud or sign a Kylian Mbappe or something like that, you know, we can't because of the way the roster rules are constructed. That's the thing that really has to change is that, okay, you want MLS to grow and you want MLS to be in the discussion as a top five league in the world. You're going to have to do something to pay these players what they can command overseas.
Still have clubs that they don't want to spend a ton. Okay. You can still be successful. You can have some success. You can still win. Correct.
Luton Town is hella entertaining. If you're not on the Luton Town train, get on the Luton train.
Whatever. There are just go for domestic cup trophies. You know, there are other ways to be successful. It's not like you just got to go out and splash all the cash. You do got to invest a little. And maybe some of these clubs that aren't spending, the Colorados of the league and what have you, even though they did spend a little bit more this season, signing Zach Steffen and a few other good players. Maybe they'll take a look at what some of their closest rivalries are doing and invest a little bit more and get better.
I'm not anti salary cap, but we have more owners that want to make investment than we do owners that are scared they're going to lose their ass. And this is the problem that we've got to either, you know, Garber's going to have to go after better ownership for those existing teams, or at least give the people some sort of flexibility and mobility. And they've done this in other leagues with salary caps and luxury taxes that are far more reasonable than $5 to $10 million, which is what we're dealing with here. Yeah. You know, $5 to $10 million, you couldn't even play the kit boy for Tottenham to come out onto the pitch for you. Realistically. Sorry. I mean, it's, you know, and I'm not saying that we all need to have like Tottenham, Manchester, you know, it's the Premier League is fun, but it's not fun to watch Manchester City run away with it every year because they can afford to buy three starting 11s.
Can't believe I'm having to pull for Liverpool this season. It's painful. All right. Next up, MLS Next Pro. And this will kind of tie into a little bit of a US Open Cup discussion as well. So for a very long time, there's been these very small independent clubs like Real Colorado, Weston FC, that have been developing really good players that make their way into professional leagues domestically and abroad. But those clubs rarely ever see any benefit from having played a key role in the player's development. I mean, and there are a couple standout players, names like Alejandro Bedoya, yep, Ethan Horvath, U.S. men's national team, you know, among others, that are being developed in these essentially 501(c) clubs, these nonprofit clubs. We're talking small. We're not talking USL League One or Two. We're talking tiny community clubs. Unlike in most nations around the world, where FIFA and its national federations administer a complex system of training, compensation, and solidarity payments to kind of repay these types of clubs, there's no direct financial component here and no means to bankroll or incentivize further efforts for these clubs to keep developing players. So there's a new initiative. It's going to be called MLS Next Pro's Development Grants. So this new initiative provides financial compensation to non-MLS member clubs in MLS Next Elite Academies who produce players who make it to the pros. The payments, really cool. It's super cool. It's more of that. When we say grassroots soccer, this is what we're talking about. We're not talking about getting a ball and kicking it in your backyard, although that's important too, to get kids, you know, engaged at an early age. This is real, like tangible, put your money where your mouth is. This is how you grow the game at the lowest levels up. This is how you do it. So the payments are first triggered to the club that's developing a player upon that player signing an MLS homegrown contract, which we're becoming quite known for, and continue with rising dollar amounts for reaching set milestones in the number of MLS matches played. Or those who are eventually transferred to clubs overseas, which does happen, Ethan Horvath, good example, right? Can reap, or any of our own players, you know, if you know, like a Bello or a Caleb or whatever. I think that's, they were all developed here and that's different, but you can reap even bigger windfalls for those clubs that help them get their start. So it's a really big deal for these small clubs and very, very tiny. And this is how you can really like spur on. And I get it. It's not like every single tiny club around the country is going to have these types of success stories, but they are out there and it is a cool way to invest in the game at a very low level and give these clubs their just desserts. Like they deserve to have this.
I think when you look at the role of, you know, the local footy club in, you know, the grassroots world,
insert like, small town name here.
You know, getting an infusion of something like $25,000 or $50,000, that's the kind of money that can fund.
Shit, getting $10,000.
Yeah, like I mean, it's, you know, that's
some of these clubs,
of
that's a ton of money.
That can fund a club for a couple of years. So, okay, great. You had the great good luck of, you know, some, you know, amazingly talented youngster, you know, happening to go through your club because it's what was around the corner and convenient for their parents, right?
Right.
You know, here's a way to keep that going and to continue to provide those opportunities for people, for kids to have a place to play. That's yep. great. I love seeing that. I love seeing it grow on a very fundamental, you know, low level, and making sure that when you start talking about some of these really big numbers that these kids are making, I mean, you know, a couple of million dollars in a transfer fee is still not, you know, we talk about that now in these days of like the 135, you know, right. 6 million, like, oh, you know, a $2 million transfer fee is not, that is not nothing money.
No.
You know, even with inflation, that's not, you know, $0.
It's a ton of money. And a portion of that going to these small clubs, it goes even further.
Mm-hmm.
It can really transform a club. I'm kind of reminded, it's not the same thing, but if you remember a few years back in the FA Cup, Spurs went to Marine FC.
Yes, I do. I remember that.
And they were playing in backyards. I mean, this pitch, there were townhomes, you know, overlooking the pitch. And Spurs, I believe, basically made a donation, bought out a bunch of tickets. It was something to the tune of $150,000.
They actually, if I remember correctly, they took no money from any ticket sales. They gave all the money from the ticket sales.
And
back
it was a big check.
And it was a big check. Because
I want to say it was $100,000 or more. And for a club that size, that can change things. Fundamentally change a club. Similar to here, this kind of financial, I don't want to call it a reward, a financial, like earned. They've earned this, you know. It can really do amazing things for the club, the community that the club's in, and give more opportunities to kids. It just rinse and repeat, right?
Yeah.
That's how you do it. That's how you build it. That's how you grow soccer in this country. I'm excited for it. Some results in the U.S. Open Cup while we're talking about small clubs. Yesterday was interesting, kicked off with round one. Not a single MLS Next Pro team advanced out of round one yesterday. Names like Portland Timbers 2 lost to a team named after a burrito shop. El Farolito SC, named after a burrito shop.
My favorite. Rolled. My favorite was Austin 2 to
lost 4-0
in penalties with 4-0. I don't know who 4-0 is, but 4-0 was they were also on a red card in the 81st minute.
This is the magic of the cup. I love getting to know some of these teams that I haven't even heard of. FC America, CFL Spurs. I imagine you're a big fan.
Yeah, bring it up. Well, except they got knocked out, but I actually am a big fan of what the South Georgia Tormenta is doing, and they've
I love Tormenta. They're great. Still working on their new stadium. It's a long drive, but I still haven't got down to a match, but I would like to. Vermont Green, good club, very new, very involved in their community. Very, I don't want to call them political, but they have a moral compass. They function a little bit differently than some other clubs as far as like their ethos of their club. It's cool to see that. And this US Open Cup means a lot to these clubs. That's why we need to keep it going.
Yeah. Yep.
Forward Madison beat Duluth FC 2-0.
And one Knoxville SC beat Asheville City 2-0 on a red. Knoxville.
Yes. And Chattanooga FC, who I've been to a couple times for friendlies and otherwise, they lost to Miami United 1-0. And tonight there's a bunch of games going on. MLS Next Pro teams are doing a little bit better. Red Bulls 2 beat Hudson Valley Hammers 5-1. Chicago Fire 2, good Lord, destroyed Chicago City SC 6-0. And Loons 2 beat Chicago House, who have the dopest crest, 3-0. So, very cool. Greenville Triumph right up the road. They beat SC United Bantams 1-0. Like all these teams.
Bantam was a hockey term.
Well, there you go. And the Richmond Kickers beat Christos FC 1-0. I know Richmond Kickers at least a little well because of the guys on Total Soccer Show with Taylor supporting Richmond Kickers. Anyhow, it's cool. I love this tournament, and I hope we can keep
it. I'm excited. Going. I really hope Spokane Velocity can actually like make some noise in this tournament because I really like what they're doing out in the middle of nowhere, Washington. I mean, not that Spokane is a small town, but like if you are driving in and out of Spokane, there's literally nothing for 3 hours in either direction. And I know this because we got stranded not so very far from Spokane.
I do remember this.
Over the summer when we were in Moose Country.
I do think we talked about that in one of the pods too, if I'm not mistaken. I'm waiting for Union Omaha. I love a good Murder Owl upset. I'm very disappointed that we'll never see Messi there. That was the dream.
Cool. That would have been cool. Want to talk about the US, the NWSL?
Yeah, they kicked off their regular season this past weekend.
Yay!
Their season runs through the first week of November. And this year, getting a little bit easier to stream and watch matches. We've come a long way from Twitter feeds and Twitch and just finding any pirate stream you can to watch this thing. Now it's on NWSL Plus, which is free.
Yes,
and
yes.
Amazon Prime, which is not.
I want to talk about NWSL Plus and the fact that it's free.
Yes.
Free, and you do not have to have an Amazon Prime subscription. You can also get it on Roku. You can also get it on Apple TV. All you have to do is go into your app store, start typing NWSL, you'll see the app, and then you can stream NWSL matches for free and not have to play channel roulette to find your favorite NWSL match to play. Because look, I'm thrilled they got a very big increase in their TV deal. And credit to the networks because they are promoting the hell out of it, which is awesome. Yes. Like really,
we
really
need
awesome.
To see that. And they should. If you build it, they will come. We are seeing sellout crowds across the world for really big matches. Arsenal's selling it out. Barcelona's selling it out. If you promote your product and you put a good product out there, people are going to be entertained and they will come and we're seeing it. So good on them.
And it's great. And they started off the season with the NWSL Challenge Cup. Yes. Which is, you know, one of the other great things that's going on with the women's game that, you know, in terms of more continental trophies on this side of the and tournaments on
yes,
this
more
side.
More things to fight for, more hardware to fight for, and, more you know, stakes.
I know it confuses. Make it compelling. You know, that's the thing. I know having all these side hustle tournaments, as I like to call them, you know, I think that they're nice. They're a little side hustle over on. You get your side action.
I like the Challenge Cup. I mean, it started in the midst of COVID, but I like what it's become. This little preseason one-off, it's a great way to kick off the season.
I mean, think it's
basically, it's the Community Shield in the Premier League. This is great.
Yeah. Yeah, it's great. So, you know, I mean, you get a good taste of what the league is going to look like. And let me tell you, that was a barn burner of a final last year. Sure, getting to see Gotham go against San Diego again was really great. And I mean, look, I don't mind looking at that San Diego kid all day long. And I know you don't, Glenn, because that is one
San Diego's kid. That's one of the best shirts. I put it up against any shirt, any club. It's great. They've killed it. The wave is so good. And they had a tremendous inaugural season last year. Like, my God, came out. Like, that's one of the best starts to any team in any league. It was incredible. It was similar to what St. Louis did.
Yeah. Where did that even come from? Yeah. Also making its debut this week is the very, very first women's professional sport dedicated stadium in this country in Kansas City.
It only took 2,024 years for that to happen. But now at least we have one and it's gorgeous. And it
seats 11,500 people. It was actually, you know, partially, Patrick Mahomes' wife has some money in the current.
Which is cool. And credit to Patrick too. He's very supportive of the team and of Sporting KC as well. They're there for a lot of the matches. That's another putting your money where your mouth is type situation.
Let's see here. Oh, and the current one, right? They made it interesting. The Thorns made it interesting. Sorry to you, Thorns fan. Man, Sophia Smith. Oh, she's beast.
Oh, in their debut match? Yeah. I mean, it was wild. 5-4, I believe it was. Goals from the current in that match in their home came from Vanessa DiBernardo in the 22nd minute, Ellie Wheeler in the 25th. I'm going to murder her name. Bia Zanerato, 34th minute, and Kristen Hamilton in the 64th, and then Alex Pfeiffer in the 68th. And then Sophia Smith had a couple for Portland and brought it back to 4, but current still got it, and good for them. You open up your stadium, brand new, you get the win. It's nice. I'm happy for them.
And one other thing, you know, we talked about in the NWSL expansion, Bay City, Bay FC, played their inaugural match against Angel City, and they got a 1-0 victory from their big striker Barcelona, who came over from Barcelona. I'm gonna murder this name, and I actually speak a little Spanish, but
go ahead.
Asisato Shiola.
Yes, let's go with that.
Okay, cool. but yeah, so
she came over for a decent fee too. And when I say this number, people are gonna kind of roll their eyes. It was like 150, 175. In women's sport, that's sizable right now because you don't have any professional NWSL player making north of 1 million right now.
Right.
So, you know, 150, that's a club spending some serious cash, and we should recognize that. It's growing. It's going to take time to catch up anywhere close to where the men are at, but 150,000, that's pretty cool.
Well, it's also interesting too, you know, we've seen more of an exodus from U.S. female soccer stars going on the other side of the Atlantic versus Europe exporting more of their talent over here. So seeing, you know, all of a sudden the NWSL flashing some cash in order to attract top tier talent is not a bad thing for, you know, the growth of the game, but also, you know, hopefully at some point in time dealing with the pay inequity, right? Like, so yeah. And as well as like the talent and the influence, because, you know, the way that the academy sides are developing over in Europe now, and the way that they're starting to turn out talent in the Women's Super League, and, you know, the league, I don't remember all the women's league names, but like, you know, the equivalents of the, you know, the League One and the equivalent of Serie A in Italy, and, you know, the Spanish La Liga, you know, all of that, you know, they're putting a lot more money and investment into the women's side. They're developing really, really good talent. We all saw that this summer. And we need those women to come over here and play with our homegrown players here in the U.S. and influence them from a work and, you know, just different soccer styles. That's how the game evolves, grows, and gets better.
Yep. Another results this weekend, Racing had it. my team. Until we get an NWSL side here, I am racing Louisville all the way. Conceded a late goal to 10 women in Orlando Pride, giving them a 2-2 draw on the road. Frustrating. It's kind of been the MO of this club over the past couple of seasons, conceding late. Something we know a little too well as well here in Atlanta.
Not this year. Not this year.
I hope not. Well, boy, now with Stian Gregersen out for some indeterminate amount of time because of meniscus tear, we won't talk about that tonight, but that could be troubling. We'll see. The Courage pummeled Houston Dash 5-1.
Oof.
The Red Stars, Chicago, where Miss Swanson is at, with Dansby up there in Chicago, they went 2-0 against Utah Royals. And Seattle Reign, really happy to have that name return from OL.
Yes.
Back to Seattle Reign, beat Washington Spirit 1-0. Early penalty too, third minute. And there's
wow.
Those games where you score early, open play or penalty, you know, like third minute, and you get out with a 1-0. To me, those types of matches are even more impressive than your 5-1s, your absolute drubbings. You know, that's hard.
I mean, that took some hard work. And in another news note, they will be retiring Megan Rapinoe's number.
I think that's appropriate.
I do too.
For everything she's done on and off the field of play. I think that's appropriate. And then you already touched on Bay FC getting their win over Angel City. Natalie Portman's team and a bunch of other, they have a really wide and diverse ownership group. There's like 20
it's
different.
It's a little bit of a cluster that they're actually trying to consolidate and get new. They're actually now trying to get new ownership in there because there's just, apparently it's from the rumblings that you read about it. There's just too many cooks in the kitchen.
Yep.
And it's difficult from a directional standpoint. So segueing that, we wanted to talk for number four about, new continental tournaments for the women's side.
Cool. And staying with the NWSL, they're partnering with Liga Ameki.
Femenil.
Today, this is Thursday, or no, it is Wednesday. I don't know what day it is anymore. The 20th, they announced a historic new partnership connecting Liga Ameki's Femenil and the NWSL in a similar kind of League's Cup type deal. I think it's a little bit better for the women than I know we're not big fans of it. It's not the same for the women's game. I think you would agree. More exposure, more international tournaments, combining, doing things like this. Good thing for the game. Good thing.
They're also, they're working on the formatting and everything, but they did also, I believe, announce there will be a women's continental championship of some sort that CONCACAF will run, I believe, starting in 2025. I remember hearing
that. That's different from the women's
that
World
is
Cup.
Different from the women's World Girl because it's club, not country.
It will be a
women's version of the continent of the Champions Cup.
Great.
Something like that.
We're at the point where leagues can do this. We have 14 teams in the NWSL. It's a long way from eight.
And I think what's going to be really interesting about the women's side of a League's Cup kind of thing is that, it's really the opposite where the NWSL has more visibility and has more name recognition the Liga MX Femenil. So whereas the men's side is leveraging the popularity and the brand of Liga MX in that association, it's going to be the other way around to help Mexico grow the women's side of the game more because it's really not.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
That we lead the way on that, that other countries and leagues turn to us to help grow their own league and product. It's awesome.
But I think it's a really interesting symbiosis with the leagues, despite the and the different leadership and all those personalities. Like, I'm thrilled to see the growth and direction of giving women's sports, women's professional soccer in particular, the same stature and the same level of competition as you're getting on the men's side. And we're probably going to run into all the same arguments and things that we bitch about having all these side hustle tournaments on the women's side and even less money.
I'm looking forward to the day where we complain about the same things in the women's game that we do in the men's, where it's that level of frustration that we have. There is no difference, bite your arm off for it. And we will get there. The tournament's going to feature all 14 NWSL clubs. And the six teams with the most points achieved in Liga MX Femenil, Clausura and Apertura during 2023, including Tigres, Club America, Chivas, Rayadas, Monterrey, Pachuca, and Tijuana. And it's from, it's kicking off on July 19th. 33-match tournament consisting of 30 group stage contests, followed by a four-team semifinal round slated for the week of August 4th. And then the championship match takes place sometime later, the weekend of October 25th or 27th.
Interesting.
It's right at, it could be tricky for some of these teams in the NWSL, because that's 1 week away from the end of the regular season. And depending on where you're at and what you're fighting for points wise, you know, it could get tricky. We'll see. But it's a good thing. I'm excited for any opportunity that this league and other leagues can take to shine an even broader spotlight on the women's game, get more exposure, get more investment, get more sponsors, make it easier for people to watch games.
Yep.
These are all very good things, and we're past the point of, at least I hope we are, token gestures.
No more white shorts.
No more white shorts.
No more white shorts. One other quick note on the women's side that just dropped. Ooh, breaking news. The Olympic football groups were announced today. Man, the women's tournament is like all groups of death. Like, is there, they're all groups of death.
We drew France. I wouldn't want to be in
either. I mean, okay, so who drew France? France? No. No.
Did France we not draw
is group
France?
A. No, France is group A. So it's France, Colombia, Canada, and New Zealand.
Oh, maybe this was the men's side that drew France?
The men's side, we drew France.
Sorry, yes, I'm conflating that. Shame on me for conflating the men's and women's.
I mean, the one good thing,
but no, you're right. Yeah, you're right.
U23s, we won't get to see our mutual man crush. I'm so sorry. Unless they decide to make him one of the exception players, but, you know, I don't know.
It could happen.
We'll see. But we'll see. I mean, look at the, okay, so France, Colombia, Canada, New Zealand. France, Colombia, and Canada are all really, really good, high-quality sides. Like, that's a bloodbath. Okay, yes. Group B is the United States, Zambia, Morocco, and then Germany and Australia. Also a bloodbath.
Depends on if Sam Kerr will be available.
Even without, it's not that Australia is deep. It's not just Sam Kerr. I mean, she makes them better.
But Sam Kerr was not
100% Sam Kerr at the World Cup, and they still went to the semis.
That you're absolutely right. You're absolutely right. I apologize for the disrespect, Australia.
Just, you know, anywho. And then Group C is Spain, Japan, one TBD, and Brazil. Are you kidding me?
Oh, Lord,
who comes out of this alive?
Nobody. I'm gonna call it right now. Nobody advances from that group. I don't know how that works, but they all just take each other out. Nobody advances. Nobody advances from that group. It's the group of death, and they all die. There's no way. Good.
So,
Lord.
And then just you know, as a footnote, the men's groups are: Group A is France, the United States. Right. There's a playoff. I think an AFCON playoff that we're waiting on, and then New Zealand. Group B is Argentina, Morocco, another African nation, and the Ukraine.
Hey, don't discount Morocco. We learned that.
Yeah. Group C is another AFCON qualifier, Spain, Egypt, and the Dominican Republic. Vamos, Dominican Republic.
Yeah, they're in it. Awesome.
That's awesome.
Good for the DR. Yep. Let's go.
Good for the DR. And then Group D is, I guess, the final Asian or African qualifier, Paraguay, Mali, and Israel.
Hmm.
Interesting group of U23 qualifiers.
Gosh, there's so much soccer happening this summer.
Keep it all straight.
You want to talk about another sport?
Hey, we could. We could talk about another sport because...
let's do it.
Like many of you, our number five is this whole NHL to Atlanta there and back again thing. So
it's been a saga, continues to be a saga.
It's crazy. And I feel all sorts of very, very mixed emotions about this on a personal level.
I think the demand is here for it. If the turnout to the Thrashers night at Gladiators a few weeks ago that you and I were at, along with a bunch of other Footy Mob members and
Resurgence members were there. They had a big group of people.
I'm telling you, Gas South Arena, I've been there a bunch of times for Gladiator matches. It's fun. Hockey's fun. Especially, you know, in that venue, you can get right up to the glass if you want, and it's a good time. That is the fullest I have ever seen that stadium. And I've been to other Blue Land nights. That place was packed out.
They had close to 10,000. And I will go on record and I will say this until I am blue in the face. It was never attendance and it was never fan support that was the problem, either with the Flames or with the Thrashers. The problem always has and always was freaking shitty ass ownership. And you have the asshole sucks group and you got poor Tom Cousins who took a bath and lost his shirt in bad real estate deals and had to sell the Flames. Didn't have a choice. He went bankrupt. Like it was crazy. It was never because those buildings were empty. Right. You can look around a whole bunch of Canadian teams that have a lot of empty seats, including one in Winnipeg, where their owner is calling out their fans for not actually showing up to games while they're like having one of their better seasons, apparently. But yeah. So yeah, don't come at me, Canada, and say we can't support a fucking hockey team here. We can if you give us owners that actually give a shit about running a hockey team, which we didn't have. When we had the Thrashers.
It's the case so many times, so many leagues, so many sports. Invest and put good product out. People will watch. People will come and give you their money in return.
You have two or three potential new teams in the NHL that are in play here, right? Mm-hmm. Number one, you have the Coyotes who were put on the high priest altar. So the Thrashers were sacrificed in their stead when they should have been just moved to back to Winnipeg where they came from. And that's obviously not what happened. And 20 years later, the Coyotes still don't have an arena. So there's a lot of discussion that they're going to be relocated somewhere because right now they're playing in a 5,000 seat college arena. They literally have no place to play.
Jeez.
It's ridiculous. Because this, you know, I don't want to get into all of that. And then you've got Salt Lake City is active. The guy who owns the Utah Jazz has pushed in a letter of intent that he wants to go after an NHL expansion team and the board of, and then we now have not one, but two groups here in Atlanta that want an NHL expansion team. One of which has actually submitted a formal request for one.
Would Atlanta be an expansion team? It's a revival or, you know, how would that work?
So what would happen? The only way we wouldn't be an expansion team is if they relocated the Coyotes over here. Now, if they relocate the Coyotes over here, it gets really interesting because we would then inherit the entire history of the Coyotes going all the way back to when they were the Winnipeg Jets originally. And I actually read something on the NHL Reddit about if that happened, somehow they should engineer a trade with Winnipeg so we can have our Thrashers history back and they can have their Jets history back. But yeah, I don't think it'll happen. What I think will wind up happening is they will send the Coyotes either to Utah or to Houston, who has actively been pursuing an NHL team. And it's a market that Gary Bettman really wants to have because they already have existing arenas and we don't. Because right now State Farm is not a viable option for hockey. We were going to get a hockey team, it's going to go into one of two potential new arena development deals, both of which have local support, local approval. The more vocal, visibly vocal, the one you've been hearing about in the news, is a group that wants to build a mixed use development over up and coming. They want something similar to the Battery, and they've gotten the Forsyth County governments behind them. They basically said, yeah, we'll give you, you know, part of the money to help build it. They've got, it seems like solid money, and an owner who claims to be a hockey fan or whatever. But like, again, there's genuine desire and interest to actively have a hockey team.
It needs to be the right interest, though, right? Like, we can't get in. If this is going to happen, you can't get into another situation of poor ownership.
No, and I feel like the coming development's just a little too far. I understand why they're trying to put it somewhere in that northern 400.
Would it at least be on the 400 line, on the north MARTA line? Would it get there? Is it coming too far?
No, MARTA stops at North Springs. Is like one exit before the exit to get to my house off of 400.
So far.
So you're talking another 25 or 30 minute drive from there. And right now you don't have any bus service. You don't have a park and ride. You don't have any infrastructure at all. What you do have, however, there's already an ice rink up there, right? That has a lot of travel hockey teams. And you're kind of splitting the difference between North Cobb, Canton, Woodstock, and North Gwinnett up in Duluth, where there's also an ice rink, and you're a straight shot up. We have the ice forum, obviously, and the Glads over there. Mm-hmm. And then you're a straight shot up 400 from center ice at Sandy Springs and 285. So, you know, people are, oh, it's not in the city, blah, blah, blah. They're scared of, you know, they would, you know, be real. The hockey market is where the ice rinks are, where these kids are playing hockey.
That's true.
And there are a lot of kids in the state that play hockey. People don't talk about it because they don't see it, because it's really kind of buried up here in the burbs. But, you know, UGA has a club hockey program. Tech has a club hockey program. KSU has a club hockey program. So they're not like varsity sports the way they are in the Northeast, but there are kids that come down here and play hockey in a college capacity. We have travel hockey. There's peewee hockey. There's good grassroots. There's good infrastructure here. And there are a lot of people that like hockey in this town. The deal I like better is the one that is being fronted by Anson Carter, who's a former NHL player. He played for I think his last team was the Hurricanes. So when he retired, he moved here in 2015 or something like that. He actually bought an ownership stake in the Glads. So he's a part owner of the Gladiators.
Okay.
And he has been very quietly, because this is not news. Like, if you have been in and around the skating or whatever community, Anson Carter has been talking about wanting another crack at a hockey team in this town for the better part of 4 or 5 years. Because he's a TV analyst. He sees what's going on. Like, I mean, he's not an idiot in that regard. Now, his development project would be in, I think, a much better location. The mall at North Point is crumbled and old, and they're closing it, and they're going to redevelop it. So basically, you already have the existing footprint.
That would be great.
You already have lots of parking. You've got the amphitheater that's right there.
Yep.
And while it's not on a MARTA rail line right now, there has been proposals and discussions about pushing the MARTA tracks. And 400 has been widened and updated to allow this to push the MARTA train all the way up to North Point. But they do have bus service, and they've also got existing park and ride lots. So right now, it's not public transportation accessible. But who's to say in 4 or 5 years, it may not be the case.
But it's more accessible.
It is much more accessible. Perfect. And it's, you know, again, that 20, 30 minutes of difference trying to make a 7:30 puck.
Yeah, it's a big deal.
That makes a big difference in what your weekday attendance is going to be. Because right now, like, I used to love going to Gladiators games. We used to have a weekend ticket package for them. And I can't, you know, we was always like, well, why don't we do more? Well, there's no way I can get to a 7 o'clock puck drop from my house in East Cobb all the way over in Duluth. It's just not going to happen.
Not possible. Yeah.
But you're still doing that thing where you're splitting the distance literally in the middle from where all your active playing hockey people are. And you have the two sheet rink, I think is the best rink in the city. The cooler that's literally right off that exit, where you've got two full regulation sheets of ice to use for practice facilities or whatever. You know, you have, you know, and then you've already got Anson Carter with an interest in the minor league team, which obviously would go back to being affiliated with whatever team that we have here. So I think if I don't know how this new guy with no history and no association with the league, I don't put anything past Gary Bettman for being a stupid idiot for making really, really bad decisions. And not to beat on a diversity horn, but the NHL has a real diversity problem, and they know it, and there's nothing that they can really do about it. You've got a lot of cultural forces at work with things along those lines. Having Anson Carter, who was probably more famous for the dreads that stuck out under his helmet than anything else that he did. I mean, he was still a good hockey player. I'm not trying to knock the guy. But, like, you know what I'm saying? Like, it would be a really smart and good look for the NHL to embrace this man's desire to be the face of diversity for the league.
And Atlanta could have a different looking team.
Maybe. Yeah.
You know what I mean? Well, like,
yeah.
Do things differently.
I think
in the way Atlanta United has done things differently, did things differently than what the teams around the league are doing. It ushered in a new era. I wonder if Atlanta could be that. That would be really cool.
And personally, I don't know if I'd be able to buy into it or not, because, you know, that whole situation with the Thrashers leaving just totally broke my heart. And I have not. I went from somebody who used to be kind of a walking hockey encyclopedia to somebody who literally, I'll turn on the TV once a year in June to see Lord Stanley's Cup, because it is still the greatest cup, the greatest trophy in sports. Hmm. You know, like, I have so much love for the Stanley Cup, like, all mad respect and props. Also, if you ever noticed the keeper of the Stanley Cup, he doesn't age. He looks exactly the same as he looked 30 years ago. Like, the man doesn't age or change. And I don't understand that, because I can't even fathom
how you much. You should understand that. Nobody in your family ages.
Well, thank you.
Do you have a Stanley Cup that you just pass amongst yourselves? Is this how it's achieved?
No, unfortunately. I wish. I've seen the Stanley Cup, though, with all the rings on it, and it's taller than I am.
Wow.
Yeah, it's cool. It's a cool trophy. They actually brought it. They had some sort of tour going on with it, and they brought it to what used to be Park Air, where I used to skate, and they brought it over there one day. So we all got to go and, like, take pictures and, like, look at it. So it was super freaking cool. It was some promotional thing. I was still in high school, but it was neat. It was really neat.
Well, I hope it happens. If you can't tell, Jennifer's very excited about hockey. She is our.
Trying not to be, because I hate Gary Bettman and I don't want to give him a dime of my money, because he's yes, but it's very hard to not be excited about possibly getting a hockey team again.
I think it's viable here. I think it has to be done right with the right people, right? People you're talking about in the right location. Like, you have to give this, you have to, like, grow it in the right way, give it a chance. And like you were saying, when the Thrashers left, it wasn't for lack of support and people not coming out to watch.
No, it really wasn't. And, you know, it's interesting, because there are a very, very large amount of people who, you know, were Thrasher season ticket holders who gravitated toward Atlanta United. And I think in a large part because Atlanta United was, as I've said before, you know, one of the first pro sports teams that was wholly our own, that,
right,
you know, we didn't compete with anybody else. You know, there was still a thing where you went to, you know, Atlanta Thrashers games and the Buffalo Sabres. Oh my God, we hated when they came. We tried so hard to drown them out, and we just couldn't. Same thing would happen when the Wings would come in. You know, the Wings games were always like, you know, whatever. But there's still a lot of, like, quote unquote hometown loyalty. So it'll be interesting. They would have to do something very creative, and they would have to really take a look at what Arthur and Uncle Arthur and Darren did to build interest in, you know, create a crowd that bought into the hometown team instead of, you know, sitting around to root for, you know, somebody else's superstars coming in.
Well said. I hope it happens. I hope it does. I think that's going to about do it for us. Thank you very much for listening. Thank you, Jennifer, for educating us all in the ways of hockey. I'm a hockey adjacent fan. I just love going for the fights.
We didn't get enough fights at Believe in Blue Land Night. We'll have to go back and get some more fights, because I mean, yeah, no.
I will support it. I will be at games if it comes, just like I will support a women's team coming here. And we're gonna get both of these things? Gosh, Atlanta's gonna be a sports mecca.
It would be cool.
If this really happens.
We'll all be broke.
Yeah, for real. With the amount of events coming, World Cup, probably Women's World Cup, Copa, hockey.
How much were your Chelsea Club America tickets?
I'm not going to that.
Really?
You sound surprised that I don't want to go watch Chelsea lose to Club America.
Well, you spend more money on your therapist dealing with your Chelsea problem that you'd rather go see your therapist than the actual football club you're in therapy for.
I've seen him before. I'm a little bit over it.
Okay.
Right now with Chelsea, to be perfectly honest, and I'm watching games. I'm happy for wins. It's all good. But until this club and the ownership and the board can show me and the fans a path, a direction, who we want to be, where we want to go, I'm not that interested. I'm just not that interested. And once that's shown to me, I'm ride or die. Win or lose, up the blues. But you got to give us something. You got to show us this is where we want to go instead of just hoping for a result week to week without really seeing any progress or a roadmap of era of Chelsea is. We haven't been shown that. I can
tell you what they do see. What they do see. They look at every fan as a dollar ATM.
Yes. Yes, I know. I know our new CEO refers to us as customers. Customers. Fans are customers. All right. We'll save that for another five aside. Appreciate you listening. Thank you very much. We will be back, I think, next week with a new Five Aside. Perhaps we're still working on the women's show that's coming out soon as well.
Super excited. And
like I said, with the Five Takes episode, we'll record that Sunday night, but the takes are going to come out a little later because I have to go watch the Hawks lose on Saturday night, work that game.
I'm going to be living my best life at the Charleston Home and Garden Show.
That's right.
Yes, I will be strolling around all the private homes in the Battery, not allowed to take pictures. Not allowed to take pictures. Not allowed to wear high-heeled shoes. Because you'll scuff your floors.
You're leaving for Charleston tomorrow?
Tomorrow, yeah.
Tomorrow morning. Cool.
Yeah.
That'll be fun.
Quality girls.
we'll put the takes out Sunday morning, Sunday afternoon, record Sunday night, and then we'll have that out Monday, and then we'll be back probably mid next week with another one of these with five new topics. All right, y'all. Thank you for listening. We will talk to you soon.